Do client conversations go sideways? Do networking events feel awkward? Do sales calls get derailed by unexpected objections? Do team meetings drag because people aren't listening? Then this episode is for you. Today, we'll show you how an unlikely skill, improv, can make you a stronger communicator, better networker, more effective salesperson, and more confident leader. Let's get into it.
Welcome, and thank you for joining us for Healthcare Happy Hour, the official podcast of the National Association of Benefits and Insurance Professionals.
And I'm your host, David Saltzman. To help us understand all of this, we've invited John Colby, a communication expert who helps business professionals use the principles of improvisation to communicate more effectively, think faster, and build stronger relationships, and lead more effectively. John will also be bringing this message and a whole lot more onto stage as a keynote speaker at the upcoming NABIP convention in Atlantic City. Welcome, John. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
It's our pleasure. So let's just dive right into it. For people who hear improv, they immediately think of one of two things: comedy club or whose line is it anyway?
Yep.
So what are we really talking about in a business context?
Basically, let's pull it back a little bit and not think of it as a performance, and let's just think of it as without a script. And if you narrow it down, you're always living without a script. So you talk about it on the improv stage, but I know as a musician, improv can be part of music as well. Where I love the Counting Crows. I'm actually seeing them later today.
Awesome.
And they are very famous for taking their own songs and mixing it up, letting somebody have an extra guitar solo or going a little extra on the drums. It's we're making it up. And so in the improv world, you never know what's going to happen. We all know the best plan never goes the way it was intended to. And so improv is basically preparing you for what to do when the script doesn't go right.
It's a great explanation. What communication mistakes do you see business professionals making over and over again? I mean, are they talking too much? Are they talking not enough? Are they burying the lead? What do you see, you know, that leads them to a less than spontaneous performance?
Your list, my answer is yes. It's all of the above. And it really depends on the person as to which end they are on. I like to start with this, and I'll say this on stage, but I say this every time I talk. The number one reason people quit their jobs, according to Forbes, is they don't feel valued. So, you know, the old adage is the number one reason people quit is their boss. But we've learned some people don't like their boss, but they like their team or they like the work they're doing. But in some area, they need to feel like there's some value. And if people don't feel valued, they quit. And so when it comes to communication, people aren't doing enough to make people feel valued, whether that's letting people have a voice, whether that's being open-minded to new ideas, whether that's being willing to let everyone on the team have an opportunity to help us all get better. I mean, I have a 5-year-old and a 7-year-old, two little girls, and I've learned even at that age, if they don't feel valued, they get mad and they get frustrated. Like, they want to say something too, or they want to be a part of it too. And so I think too often as a leader, we just try and delegate instead of collaborate.
You know, for our audience, you know, largely insurance advisors, is it that they're trying too hard to control every conversation, and so they kind of do the show up and throw up thing, and their ears are closed?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's the delegate thing. It's, I'm coming here to say what I need to say. And so as a speaker, I mean, anybody that sees me speaks realize that I don't just get up and speak the whole time. It's an interactive event, because you take more from it when you engage in it, and you also feel more in value. You feel more in personal value when you're a part of the experience instead of what I like to call a sit and get. You just sit and get information, and that doesn't have a lot of value, but also people don't retain as much. There's a lot of reasons why that doesn't work.
But if you go into a sales presentation, you know, I've taught salespeople for years, and we help businesses now with their marketing. If you just shut up, the client will tell you exactly what it is that they want and exactly what it is that they need. And if you have more of a conversation, then you're building a relationship, and relationships are the key to the castle, in at least in this business. But how do you deal with an unpredictable conversation? I think there are some advisors who just think, if I don't do my 87.3 PowerPoint slides, there's no way for me to win this business.
It's so funny. You even said part of it is just be quiet, right? I mean, we say on the improv stage and in the business world, let the silence do the heavy lifting, right? Just be quiet and let it happen. But when we engage in a conversation, if I'm trying to sell to you, it's not, I mean, more and more sales, people have their guard up. No matter what it is, like if you're at a farmer's market and somebody walks up and tries to give you a free sample, no thanks, because you know that's going to turn into a sales pitch. So conversations led by the buyer make the buyer feel like they're in control, and they are, because ultimately they're the ones going to decide. So our goal as performers and as business leaders is to let them control, let them tell us what they want, let them tell us what's not working, let them share the need all day long, and we lean into it. Yeah. Oh man, that's frustrating, isn't it? Just acknowledge what they're saying makes them feel like somebody's actually caring about what they're feeling, not just trying to sell another widget.
And, you know, to your point, let the silence work for you. You mentioned improv. You know, in music, sometimes the best music is in between the notes. Uh-huh. And, you know, you have to kind of trust. It's like, you know, that old exercise where, you know, you'll lean backwards and hope your coworkers will catch you instead of letting you hit the floor.
Yeah.
When a client throws you a curveball, how do you stay calm under pressure? How do you avoid freezing?
There's a few different things you can do. One of the first things I've learned is repeat back the last thing they said. It does two things. Number one, it shows them you're listening, but it also allows your brain to process it on another level. So while you're repeating it, your brain, even though you're saying these words, are already starting to move forward to the next words. After you repeat that, you can get quiet to let your brain think about what you want to say. And again, I had a young salesperson once say, a pause makes me look stupid. And I'm like, no, it makes you look thoughtful. Like, I don't care if you're selling the same thing over and over again. I want to feel like this is the first time you've had this conversation, because it is. You've talked to a million other people, but it's the first time you talk to me. And then after that moment of silence, you can either go into something that acknowledges what they say. So often we'll listen and then go right back into our sales pitch. I'm like, nope, if you miss the connection point, you've lost them. But more valuable often than going it with a sentence to respond to what they said, a statement, excuse me, to respond to what they said, go with a question. A follow-up question does so much to say, here's what I heard you say. Now I want to learn more. And so again, it allows you to get more out of them and allows your brain to fully understand it while you're coming up with a response to that curveball statement or question.
Yeah, but salespeople are taught to perfect their pitch. Is that just the wrong goal altogether?
In my mind, yes. And I have friends that speak solely on sales, and they're like, yeah, but you need to know what you're going to say. And I'm like, yeah, but it's the playbook. But man, I love sports. And the best coaches, in my opinion, are the ones that adjust. And it's not just like in football, it's not just halftime adjustments. It's not just possession adjustments. It's play to play. And what you start learning is what works and what doesn't. And what works when I'm selling to you is not necessarily going to work when I sell in my next game or my next conversation. So it's always about knowing your content, but then being engaged in that conversation and trust that your knowledge will get you through.
So improv is really about flexibility and being able to take what someone's saying and then adapt it. And those are the two famous improv words, yes and.
Yes and.
How do you use that in a sales milieu?
So I worked with a company and I worked with their customer service, the frontline people, and people were calling in and flat out asking for things that they could not do. Like, well, can you give me a discount on this? Or can you lower my bill on this? And the first words a lot of those phone people were saying was no, or I'm sorry. And I'm like, ooh, Nobody wants to hear the word no, right? You tell anybody no, they're going to get frustrated, right? You're putting the wall up. So we learn to say yes and. So for example, somebody calls and says, hey, I want a lower bill on what I'm currently getting. Yes, and we're all looking for a good deal. Honestly, right now, the economy's crazy. We're always trying to find ways. So right away, I'm saying, yes, I agree with you. I'm acknowledging why. And then again, I'm going to ask a question to find out what they're looking for. And then my and, so they tell me a little bit more. I'm like, yes, and I have some great news for you. If we bundle up this, or if you add on this, you're actually going to get a lower price overall because of this. So technically, I'm saying, no, you can't just have a cheaper bill, but I'm saying yes, and we can work together to find other options. And the customer service satisfaction rating after this yes and call, they said went up almost 50% of the customer service where you schedule, like after this call, you get a one question survey on a 1 to 5 scale, how satisfied. The numbers went up by 50% over the next, I think it was 6 weeks. And it's literally just reminding people, and a lot of them took a post-it note, put it on the side of their laptop or computer that just said yes and, reminding them, lead with yes, lead with connection instead of no and I'm sorry.
So at the convention, there's going to be, I don't know, 600-700 folks, and some of them have known each other for years, but a lot of the attendees are first-time attendees. How can improv help make somebody feel better when they're networking and help them connect with strangers?
That's a great question. When I'm working with them, so if it's 700 people in the room, first of all, I'm not going to let anybody be uncomfortable. Because when you're uncomfortable, you don't learn. Some people hear, oh, I'm going to do improv. I'm going to be put on the spot. I'm like, no. We're not going to be doing any of that. All the games that we play, first of all, everybody in the room is playing. I don't bring anybody up on stage. Secondly, I give you a very simple way of finding a partner so those introverts don't have to awkwardly go up and ask somebody to dance. Then I give you a topic to talk about. And so once you have the topic, that makes it a lot easier. And then I give you an improv rule to follow. So what happens is you don't have time to be anxious about interacting with somebody else because I already gave you something to talk about, but I've also given you a little game to play in your head. And between having a topic and a game to play, you don't even think about being nervous or interacting with somebody. You're just playing this game. And at the end of the game, and these games are only a minute to 90 seconds long typically, but at the end of the game, you know your partner a little bit better. And you also know a little bit more about yourself. So I've helped you start connecting with somebody and learning a rule that you can now start applying in every area of your life, whether it's professional or in your personal life.
Can you give us an example of how that would play out? If I walk up to you at convention, I mean, we already know each other, but if I walk up to you at convention and say, hi, I'm John Smith. I'm from Peoria. Who are you? What do you do? I want to learn more about what you're doing and how it might help me.
So the first thing, the first thing I would do is ask a follow-up question based on what you say. And I'll tell you, everybody finds their own thing. So right away from you say Peoria, I'm like, oh, you're right down 74. I actually grew up in Brownsburg, Indiana, but it's right on 74. And I remember as a kid, there was a sign that said Indianapolis that way and Peoria, Illinois that way. And so here's my thing. I'm now 47 years old and I've never been to Peoria. If I were to go there, where would I eat? What's your favorite place? And so right away, I turn around and start asking you questions based off something you said. So it takes the pressure. A lot of extroverts love to talk, but sometimes they don't always connect. They just kind of take the stage. And a lot of introverts hate this beginning because they don't know what to say. So what we start doing, and we'll play a game on this too, is play games about showing the value and power of asking questions to build connections. It takes the responsibility off of the introvert to be on the stage, and it reminds the extrovert to share the stage.
And connections are important. Even if we go back to what we were discussing a few minutes ago, if we go back to sales, if a prospect says ABC, find a connection point. Find something that lets, from what they've said, that lets you expand the conversation.
Yeah.
That immediately puts them at ease. I mean, I've seen it, and you have too, a zillion times. And yet some people just think, oh, no, I got to go back to my script.
Right. That's why I say be careful about being too scripted, because I'll even tell you on stage, I'm not scripted. I know speakers who memorize their speech word for word. And I'm like, but what happens when you have just a momentary blip in your brain and you forget? And I had somebody go, oh yeah, I froze up for 10 seconds one time. And I'm like, see, that's the weird thing. You're the expert on that topic. You should be able to just talk about it. And if going off of your script throws you so much that you can't talk, that you shouldn't be scripted, right? So that's why a conversation feels more honest. Even if I'm on stage in front of 700 people, it's still a conversation. So I teach people presentation skills. Don't present to a group. Present to individuals in that group, right? So then, again, you're still building that connection.
You know, it's interesting. Not too long ago, I did an awful lot of public speaking, and I'd always ask to come in the day before or the night before so I could hang and listen and find those little connection points. So now the audience goes, oh, he's one of us. He gets what we do. You know, in the marketing side of the universe, clients only have one question. Same with every client. Can you help me solve my problem?
Yeah.
But if you don't take the time to listen to what the problem is, and that's that connection point that you're talking about, it's really powerful.
Yeah. It's so funny because I like to do the same thing. Get there early and just kind of hear what people are talking about. When I meet people, I kind of ask, like, what are your challenges right now? What's something that you're facing? And then when I'm on stage, just bringing it up, again, what does it do? It makes the audience recognize that you value them and you're taking the time to understand them, just like a salesperson. I'm not just coming in with my talking points. I hear you. I'm working with you. Let's solve your problems together.
Absolutely. So let's take a little bit of a leap and talk about how improv can help somebody become a stronger leader. Is it all the things we've talked about, better listening, faster decision-making, stronger team engagement? How does that work?
So yeah, all of those things definitely help as a leader because, like I said, people want to feel valued. But another thing that leaders need to do is acknowledge you're not always the smartest person in the room. And more importantly, you don't have to be. I think often leaders, like parents, feel like you're supposed to have the answers. So when people come up to you, I have witnessed in an office a leader saying something that was 100% wrong, but they said it with confidence because they were on the spot in front of several people on the team asking them a question. I talked to him afterwards. I was like, one of the most powerful phrases you can say in leadership is, I don't know. Because what you're now doing is saying, I'm the expert, I'm the leader, I'm the one who's been doing this the longest, but I don't know everything. This does two things. Number one, it tells the team, I need you. I need all your individual skill sets because all of us are stronger than any one of us. But more importantly, what you're modeling is you don't have to be perfect. One of the big rules of improv is there are no mistakes. And so it's only an opportunity to learn. And so if I have a boss or I have a parent or I have a spouse who says, I don't know, what you're doing is saying, it's okay for us not to know everything. Because if I model, if I don't know it, I'm going to lie, I'm going to make something up. Well, guess what? That means now your team is going to go out on sales calls and they're going to lie and they're going to make stuff up. And that comes back to bite us, right? So let's just say we know what we know. We don't know what we don't know. And again, I've had pushback. I had a salesperson say, well, I can't say I don't know something. I guess you can. You can say, you know what? I don't know that, but I'll definitely get you the answer by the end of the day. That's just saying, like, I'm human. I'm going to get better and I'm going to help you, right? We want to work with authentic people. We don't want to work with robots with a memorized script, and we don't want to work with robots who know everything. We want to work with people we trust. And you telling me I don't know tells me you're not going to lie to me. We're going to work together to find answers.
Yeah, except in Washington, D.C., where they say authenticity is what you need. And if you can fake that, you got it made.
Yep.
Anyway. Yep. Anyway, let's talk about how that the whole idea of yes and has the opportunity to actually change team communications. If you're a leader and somebody says something and you say yes and, what should you expect back and why are you doing that as a leader?
You're telling people their thoughts have value. Like when you bring me an idea, maybe it's even a complaint. so often we filter it through our experience, and right away we are the opposite of yes and people. We're no but people, or yes but people, right? And so I'll hear somebody with an idea and I'll say, no, we don't have the money for that. And then somebody else comes up to me and I'm like, yes, but we tried that before. No, but I would love to, but we don't have the resources. Like, we're already strapped right now. We're stretched thin, right? You start giving all the reasons why it won't work. And so what we're doing is limiting creativity, limiting ideas. We're shutting down innovation before it even has a chance to be explored. And so what yes and says is, I don't know if this will work or not, but let's find out. Let's talk about it. So yes and doesn't mean we agree to every weird idea somebody has. It means I'm willing to explore it because there's value to be had there. And what you'll slowly learn is some of your newest people on your team have some of the best ideas because they don't know all the fake rules that we've already imposed on ourselves, right?
Absolutely true. Healthcare, which is where almost all of the audience at NABIP is going to be dealing with, it's highly regulated. It's incredibly detail-driven, getting more and more so every day. Where does improv fit without creating chaos?
Oh, that's a good question. Improv allows people to explore what's still possible. Because when you, there are regulations. This is by law, this is what we have to do. By the rules say that we can't do this. But an improv brain goes, okay, so what can we do? Are you going to be a person who looks at the obstacles and says, well, this is my excuse as to why I can't do it? Or are you going to be an improv brain that says, here are the obstacles. What am I still able to do to get past them? This goes back to, I'm going to get into sports again a little bit here. I don't know where all your people are from. I know we're going to be in New Jersey, so we're fairly close to New York, and we're getting into Phillies territory. But again, they're from everywhere. I'm a Colts fan. I think a lot of us can agree across the country that we don't like the New England Patriots. Now, if you are a New England Patriot, I'm not hating on you. I'm saying we hate you because you won a lot of championships. But one of the things that, as much as I hate the Patriots, I have to acknowledge is Bill Belichick was so good at looking at the rules. And every year, the competition committee adds new rules. And what's happened is over the years, they've had to add new rules because Bill Belichick kept finding ways to get around it. And so he would add, like, people would add another offensive lineman just to have another big guy in the front to try and block so they could run the ball. But Bill Belichick goes, actually, if you have an extra big dude, he can actually go catch balls. He can be a receiver. And people were like, that's not fair. He wasn't. Yeah, he did. He, like, you declare eligible so you can go do that. And for people that don't listen to sports or don't like sports, I don't want to lose you. What I'm trying to say here is there are leaders who look for the path forward instead of being caught up in the obstacles. And that's what a yes and mindset allows us to do. Just because we're more regulated doesn't mean we are stuck. It means that we now need to get creative to still find solutions for our customers.
One of the things that we all struggle with are meetings and committees. And, you know, I always think that the best committee consists of no more than three people, two of whom are absent. But we're all in meetings all the time. How can improv make the meeting itself better and more productive?
Oh, man, I have a whole hour on meetings. I have a keynote called Your Meetings Suck. And it's because most meetings do suck, right? I think the important thing I want to share on this is the adult attention span, where you could sit quietly and listen, is a maximum of 18 minutes. That's why if you watch TED Talks, the longest TED Talk is 18 minutes long, and it's focused on that research. So when it comes to yes and, you need to be yes anding your meeting. And what I mean by that is when we are meeting on any topic, I can't let anybody in that room sit quietly for more than 18 minutes because you're going to lose their attention span. Their short-term memory gets full and other things start going out, and then they just start kind of lose their focus altogether. So instead, find opportunities for people to chat. Not necessarily as a whole group, because if you have three people, we can all chat as the three of us. But if the room is 10 or 20 people, so often people, well, we don't have time for everybody to talk. Yes, you do. They don't all need to talk out loud for the whole room. Some people don't want that. They feel uncomfortable sharing. They're not in a leadership position where they're used to doing it, and they don't want to. They're afraid of being wrong or called out or say something incorrectly, but they're not uncomfortable if you allow them to talk one-on-one. So whether you're in person with your meeting or you're virtual, I encourage breakouts throughout the meeting. So if this is a one-hour meeting, think about it. 18 minutes max says, if I add in breakouts in the meeting, one a little before 20 minutes and one a little before 40 minutes, you have an opportunity for people to talk about it. So you give them some question based on the content that they've been listening to and go, hey, how are you going to apply this in your department? Or maybe 40 minutes in, hey, another question for you. I'm going to put you in a breakout room in Zoom. I'm going to put you in breakout rooms. I want you to talk about what additional resources you need before you can start applying this new concept or this new software or whatever it is. Now what they're doing is two things. Number one, they are getting a chance to talk to somebody else and it allows them to feel valued and heard and connected. It also resets that internal clock, but also it helps them retain more information because when they hear it, it's just going into their short-term memory. But when they start getting a chance to apply it and process on a deeper level, going basically from basic comprehension now into analyzation, where they start filtering it through their own thoughts and needs, now they're more likely to understand the information. They feel more valued. It's a simple trick that you can use in any meeting of any size to let everybody feel like they're part of it.
Do you teach them the whole yes and thing first?
Yeah. Yeah, and we'll get into that. I mean, when I'm doing a keynote, I always review yes and. So there are companies or conferences that I speak at every year. I'm actually speaking at a conference. I'm very excited about this coming up in October, and I MC the entire event, and I've been doing it for 7 years. But every year, I start with a reminder of yes and because it's the principle. And said, if we can't be yes and, none of this stuff works.
Last question. For someone listening who says, yeah, that all sounds useful, but I'm not that kind of a person, where should they start? I mean, what's one easy practical exercise?
One of the easiest things is just to start with like the if statement. And if basically says, if we needed to solve this, what could we do? Or what resources would we need? Or if I wanted to create more engagement in the meetings, what's something I could do? So the ideas and tips I'm giving work for some people. They don't work for other people. But what you start with is an if situation going, if we needed to improve sales by 5%, if we need to have a follow-up meeting so we don't lose that customer, what could that look like? And that allows you to play the improv scenario in your head and kind of look at all the scenarios. And let's be honest, most people think of the worst case scenario, right? And so at least you feel like you're prepared when you go into the real situation. And what's lovely is in most of those real situations, it's not nearly as bad as the nightmare we created in our head. So it allows you to start playing improv in your head before you even go and interact with another person.
Great advice. John Colby. John, thanks for spending some time. And we all look forward to seeing you at convention in Atlantic City in a couple of weeks.
Thanks. I look forward to being there.
Thanks so much.
You can have the Healthcare Happy Hour podcast downloaded automatically by subscribing on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can also find a link to the podcast in the member-exclusive Washington Update, published on Fridays. For more information on our government affairs efforts or to become a member, visit nabip.org.